So here we are and the system is broke. American dream has gone up in smoke. So stop sitting there all broken hearted. Let's get this motherfucking party started. Lady Liberty is ringing a bell, and we're driving us straight into hell. But don't worry, we got what you need. Crank up the volume till your eardrums bleed. Go and make America, America again.
Welcome everyone to the A Better Way to A podcast. I'm your host, Jordan. We are waiting on Andrew because his life is chaos. And today we're here with Larry Rosen. He is the guy behind the Enemies Project, where he brings people with completely different worldviews face to face for honest, sometimes uncomfortable conversations. He's a longtime mediator who's not interested in debates or winners. He's all about helping people actually hear each other, something we've spoken about multiple times on this podcast. Larry's work is less about changing minds and more about making space for understanding, even when people seriously disagree. This is something that has really intrigued me and kind of what A Better Way to A started. Finding you guys, finding the Enemies Project on Instagram was a breath of fresh air, because I think this is something that is seriously necessary in today's space. And I'm so glad somebody like you is doing it. Thank you for coming on the podcast to talk about this.
Thanks. It's my pleasure. And it's great to find like-minded people out there. You know, that you're kind of trying to do the same thing I'm doing, but in a very specific space.
That's really it. Yeah, no, and exactly. One of the first videos that I saw on the Instagram was you had a woman with a MAGA hat on talking to a trans woman, and they were having a conversation about what femininity meant to them. And so many times we see these conversations happen in such a superficial atmosphere on Instagram, on social media, and it's just slinging insults. And it was such a profound question that this guest asked. I don't remember if it was you that asked that or if it was the trans woman, but it was such a profound foundational question that I don't think people ever take the time to explore, because that was really, it blew my mind. Because once you start asking those questions, it really gets down to like the core of why we disagree on things.
Exactly. And you know, that's just not the bread and butter of the internet or of social media to understand people. You know, conflict is where the clicks are. So it's just not what we see typically. It's not where the effort is. And that's what our program is about, to understand the other person really deeply, like as well as they understand themselves. Conversation ends where two enemies essentially say, "You get me as well as I understand myself. You get me. We are complete in that." And once that occurs, if a person understands you as well as you understand yourself, there's almost no chance that you will leave as enemies. You'll leave probably,
yeah,
absolutely loving that person. Like, holy cow, I may still disagree with you, but I love you.
That's amazing, man. I think love would be the ultimate win, really. If you can get two people to walk away loving each other, that's something that I don't even dream of in our space. But, you know, where we strive for basic understanding of people's core beliefs and the tenets of where we disagree on things, I just want people to walk away and say, listen, like in the context of the gun control debate, I want people to understand that, like, listen, we both want kids to stop dying. We want gun violence to end. We just have different ways to go about doing that. And I think what you are doing and what the Enemies Project is doing is showing that at the bottom of everyone's belief, they want the same thing. They want people to be happy. They want people to be protected. And
that's it. I mean, that's basically it. In like every, yeah, context, they want to protect themselves and their loved ones, not just in the gun debate, you know, although that's obviously a very obvious and physical manifestation of that desire to protect yourself and to protect your loved ones. But that's basically it. And, you know, you get deep with people and that's what they want. And, you know, your goal is to have them understand that at least at an intellectual level, and hopefully, you know, at a slightly deeper level, And I take the time, you know, we take the time to really get them past the intellectual level to like really understand why this is emotionally important to the other person. Like what in their life made this so important? You know, like for you, we can just say that you're interested in guns, you're interested in protecting your family or whatever it is. That would be like something that someone else can understand. Or we could go a lot deeper and say, what was your life like as a kid and how did it relate to what you're doing now? Like, what did you love as a kid? What did you absolutely love? And how did that somehow spin into your love for guns? And what's deeply important to you? Like, not just like, I want to protect my family, but let's hear about your family. Why does your daughter matter so much to you? Why does your wife matter so much to you? What experiences have you had where they might have been at risk? You know, then the person listening is like totally drawn into your experience and they can feel it themselves. And that's kind of where the shift happens, not just up here, but if they're kind of living your life.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's really important to find that connection that shows people that there are similarities between two people. Because, I mean, we see the kid debate come up all the time. It's always, whether it's metal music or video games or guns or gender-neutral bathrooms, it's always about protecting the kids. And I think while there are some people who nefariously use that excuse as a way to push specific agendas, I think the reason it's so successful is because we all want the same thing. We all want our kids to be safe. They're innocent. They're harmless, and they're so, you know, precious to us. And showing people that, you know, the basis of one argument comes down to that. And for the other person on the opposing side, they feel the same way, either about their kids or about kids they don't have, that they can just relate to the parents of those kids. I think it's really something that's important, because it goes way past that superficial conversation that we're used to on social media and even on the news. You know, there's so many times that I've seen people talk about things on the news where they'll say an inflammatory statement with zero clarification. And you know, as somebody from the outside who's, you know, I would like to think not sucked into this, that statement was meant to elicit an emotional response from the people who already agree with the news program.
I agree.
It's completely not meant to generate critical thought.
Yeah. People speak to their audience and they're so used to that that they almost are unaware that there's another audience, the person sitting across from them. They're so used to getting the support from their own side that the other side is almost irrelevant or a tool simply to get the emotional support from their own side. And it obviously does not produce any level of positive shift in the other side.
Like, no, not at all.
And that's just the way, you know, I call it a enemy makers. You mentioned two things a moment ago about, you know, that there are people who kind of, this is kind of what they do. They generate this animus kind of intentionally. Like you said, that there are people who want to protect their kids, and then there are people who kind of understand that and use that as a wedge. They kind of leverage that for their own power. And I call those people enemy makers. That's their job. They profit financially or politically from creating enemies. They wouldn't basically have a job otherwise. They wouldn't have support otherwise.
Yeah.
And so they're completely dedicated to that, but they have to walk through a door of kind of social acceptability on their side. They have to walk a path that is important to the people on their side. And so in this case, you know, they might talk about both what their side cares about to their side, like, we are the good guys, we love kids. And then they'll talk about how the other side are evil. They hate kids, you know, they abuse kids. Whatever it is that they believe will generate, you know, an extremely strong support on their side. And it's hard to believe. Some of them are sincerely interested in their side, but many of them aren't. It's just, you know, a tool to divide us. I didn't really understand that, how division really serves leaders. until maybe 6 or 7 years ago when I really started to study it, when I realized I don't understand group conflict as well as I need to. And it's clear now to me and probably most people in society, you know, that driving a wedge activates your own side to an extraordinary extent. It also creates the enemy. So, and that serves you because then they attack your side and the people on your side and they choose a strong leader. But I didn't really understand what kind of leader would want people divided? What, I don't understand that. Who would want that if you're the leader of a people? But now it's obvious how it serves them.
Yeah, no, and it's unfortunate because, you know, everybody wants to talk about this idyllic world where we're all getting along and we're all in agreement with each other. At least maybe we don't agree with each other, but we understand each other and we can work through our problems on our own. But that there are, you know, without putting my tinfoil hat on, there are far too many people who benefit from us monetarily and, you know, ideologically when it comes to elections and whatnot that keep us for them to actually work towards that. You know, I've been critical of our election system for years. I would love a system like ranked choice voting in the US that allows people to vote for who they want to vote for without having the feeling that their vote is wasted if their person doesn't win immediately. But that goes completely against everything that the people who are in charge of our electoral system are interested in. They don't want us to vote for who we want to. They want us to vote against the person that we don't want to win. And I think it really speaks to, the current state of our ability to communicate with each other.
And can people like you and me, you know, make a difference in helping people understand that we're being used? You know, we're totally just tools of those people who want power, and they drain the country, the world, our society, our communities, like the gun community. They might drain that community of goodwill, right? Like it drains it. And what do we build them? We're just fighting each other. That builds absolutely nothing. People who are fighting each other have never built anything. And so
it's a really good point.
So that's where our energy goes. And I imagine it. You have friends who are liberal and friends who are conservative. And you like totally get each other because you've spent time together, you know, out on a trip, you know, where you've.
No, yeah, you're right.
And like you love these people and you're like, I'm not going to fight a civil war against you. Like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard, that I'm going to fight you. You know, but that's what they would lead us to believe, like that, you know, the person on one side and the person on the other side should hate each other, where that person is evil. Like, how could that person possibly support Trump? That's what they'd tell you. How could they must be an absolutely heartless jerk. And you're like, okay, we have different politics, but I know this person loves their family and loves their community.
Yeah.
And I've had fun with them and we shoot the shit and, you know, we make fun of each other and we get drunk together or whatever it is that you do. And, you know, like, we go to the same restaurants, we shop at the same stores, our kids are friends. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And yet that's the narrative and we're driven to it.
Yeah. It's so easy to other people that you don't speak to and that you don't understand. You create these, you know, in groups and out groups by telling people that those people don't respect you and want to hurt you and want to change your way of life. And you can say that for either side. You've got I know people who voted for Trump because, you know, it's getting harder and harder to justify certain things, but I know people who voted for Trump purely for financial reasons because of, you know, they've got they had very large inheritances set up for family members, or, you know, very large by, you know, modern standards, and they simply did not want the estate tax that Kamala was promising. And, you know, when you put things like that, it comes down to, again, protecting family. And if you think financial security is the best way for you personally to protect your family, then it makes sense to vote for the person who is going to give you the best chance of doing that. Now, there's a myriad of other social issues and economic issues. And, you know, it really just depends on where your priorities are.
you said that it might be hard to like start, you know, started financial, it's hard to justify other things. And that may seem true. So I'm not sure, but it sounds like you might be left leaning, but whether or not you are, there are people who are, and they might say, look, I understand, you know, I can intellectually understand the economic issues for you. It may sound selfish to me, but I understand it. But now look, like you're deporting people who are powerless. Like, so the people on the left might say that, and that's just like, that's just pure evil. Like, don't you just care about your family and not other people? But I think what's important to understand is that if they are doing something that you believe is evil, let's say, and I'm not saying that it is evil or you actually personally believe that, but let's say that's occurring, it's likely occurring because they've been fed a message that you're evil.
Exactly.
That you know, and who's not going to fight
exactly
it? Who is not going to fight it? Like, they're doing what is to protect their family. They're fighting people on the left who don't care about families, they believe, don't care about honesty, don't, you know, so they've been fed that. And so they're not evil. They if someone,
they don't believe they are. And that's the Larry, I agree 100%. Yeah. It's such a paradox, because both sides 100% believe that they are the good side. And, you know, I've got my own views and I'm sure you do also, but that's the crux of it really, is that both sides are saying I'm the good guys and you're the bad guys. And there's zero communication that goes on to clarify why they think so. It's just that I talked to my dad, and you know, my dad and I, we've had very good conversations about Israel and Palestine, because my dad and I are both Jewish. He's a Zionist, I'm not.
Oh, I have a great episode coming up with a Zionist and an anti-Zionist on our show. But anyway, but go on.
I would love, I'm definitely going to have to watch that. We've had, you know, in my opinion, my dad has said some like very appalling things, but it comes down to his belief that he is on the right side, that he's had this belief since he was a child. He lived on a kibbutz in Israel, and he's got this core memory that influences his belief. It's almost this, like this idyllic childhood memory that he constantly wishes that he could return to. And when he tells me these things, I understand why he believes what he believes. And then I tell him my perspective, and it's only because we're father and son and we have this relationship that we can have these deep conversations. You know, I'll mention to him I see these fathers and mothers carrying their lifeless children out of rubble. Like, how would you feel if that was me carrying my daughter out of rubble? And it was, say, you know, New York that did the bombing to Connecticut. And, it's a much more closer to home type situation. And I can see the gears turning, because that's an issue that he can relate to, because it's much closer to home. And having those kinds of conversations, I'm not looking, I would love to change his mind, but I'm just looking for understanding, you know. And I'm looking to something that we've always told people is, if you have a conversation with somebody you disagree with, the goal should not be to prove that you are right. The goal should be to prove that you can be a trusted resource for them to come back to at a later date.
Yeah.
And it's because the timeline is not short when you're having conversations with people and trying to convince them that your side is right and their side is wrong. The timeline is not something that can be captured in a 5-minute conversation on social media. This is something that could take weeks, months, years. And for them to see you as a trusted resource while disagreeing with you fundamentally disproves what they've been told. And when they see that that is not true, then they start to question other things that they've been told by quote unquote their side and the people that are feeding them this information. And it starts this snowball effect where, okay, well, if this is not true, then what else is not true? And listen, when I started learning about things like MK Ultra and Operation Northwoods and all these things that our government did in the 60s and the 70s and the 50s on US citizens, it was a snowball thing for me where I was like, wow, okay, I can never trust my government again. And that's just an example, but that same kind of small seed needs to be planted when we're having these kind of conversations. And that's what I love that you do in the Enemies Project, because you being a mediator allows people to have these conversations and ask the questions and reach conclusions that I don't think would ever happen in, you know, say at a bus stop or at a restaurant where, you know, you're sitting across the table from a business partner that you happen to disagree with, because sometimes we need a little help. And sometimes we need somebody to say, okay, that's a valid point, but let's listen to what she has to say. And one of the reasons I wanted you on was because I so appreciate what you're doing, because it's hard work, and it's got to be mentally taxing for you, because I'm sure you have your own beliefs, and you know, you see what you're doing, like you were saying, what are we do, like, what can we do, what change can we have? You see what you're doing and the change that you're doing up against everything else, and it's got to feel daunting sometimes, because it does for me sometimes. You know, when I think about it, when I think big picture, I'm like, what am I even doing?
Yeah, you know, I'd say two things that it feels that way on a personal level. If you're trying to convince one person, you know, I decided that I wanted to shift millions of people. You know, like I'm a mediator long term, and I've done thousands of mediations, and I work with individuals, so I've affected those people. But I decided I wanted to have a big impact, and it's less daunting when I look at, you know, the potential reach that you can have through social media, through, you know, YouTube station. But also, yeah, you know, the goal is not, as you said, to shift the person out of their beliefs, at least on my show. And people in the comments, you know, might be critique like, look, I provide an update on this trans episode. This trans episode is amazingly powerful, where there's this woman who is trans, and the other woman is a MAGA supporter and believes trans people belong in mental institutions. And so they come together and they do a lot of arguing, and then, you know, then we follow a different approach. And the goal is not to change either one of them out of their beliefs. That's not my goal. It might be their goal on the show. But my goal is to have the people who are trans supporters who hate those people who hate trans people, right? The trans supporters who are mostly a younger audience and a liberal audience, who cannot understand the meanness that they perceive on the right. My goal is to change their belief, their dislike of those people from a 10 to a 6 or a 5. And the people on the right who hate trans people, who just think trans people are trying to convert their kids to being trans, and who believe they're evil in some way or mentally ill. My hope is to change their beliefs, the audience, but to dial their dislike and their distrust down from a 10 to a 5. That's the long game, because people who are 5s, yeah. So people look at the show and they say, look, you know, I provided an update. And I'm like, they're both still in the same belief system that they were, but they love each other. And so what's the point? People say, what's the point? I don't even understand the point if they still have the same belief system. And the point is that those kind of people can work with each other. Those kind of people, yeah, can actually design systems in society that work. They don't waste their time fighting. And in time, it goes from a 5 to a 4 to a 3, and then you're actually in the same group. That's my goal. So as you said, it's not an immediate, the goal isn't immediate, it's a long goal, and that's, yeah, hard for people to understand in today's society, when, you know, you got to win now. But look, the people who've driven everything us apart, instant, they had long goals. It's a design system, and those people had long goals, and now we're facing the cost of them being extremely strategic. And yeah, my belief is that we have to be strategic in return.
I agree. What got you to start this? Because it seems like something that I feel like a lot of people would love to be a part of, you know, who have the same goals that we do. But what got you to actually say, okay, this is something I'm going to make happen?
I guess it was like, the thing that first of all, I was writing a book, and I wrote it for about 10 years. And in the book, people were doing this thing, like really trying to figure out how to make peace with their enemies. So I wanted to do that in the real world. So in some ways it was just a reflection of like, if they can do it in theory, I can do it in reality. But I would say that what I go back to is my wife, I live in the Bay Area. My wife is from Ohio, and in Ohio, there are a lot of conservative people, and like members of her step family go on Trump trains. They're like part of a boat community, and they have Trump trains on boats. And to me, it sounds like, you know, or to people on, in, at least in where I live, that sounds like lunacy. Like, who are these people who love this guy? I don't care who it is, who love this guy so much. And they say to me, Larry, I live near Berkeley, not in Berkeley, but near Berkeley. They're like, that's crazy town, right? Like, what is that like living in that kind of lunacy? You seem so normal. I'm like, nah, it just seems normal to me. Like, everyone around me is just like me. And so, you know, they're shocked that I'm like a normal guy out on the West Coast. and you know, here I am thinking these people, they're really fun. Like, they're really kind. They have so much fun. I mean, them on the water on their houseboats, you know, driving around in their four-wheelers, like to each other's houses, getting drunk with each other. Like, I want to do that. and you know, and we're out at the same restaurant. We eat the same food. We're having fun. Nobody says anything negative about each other. So it just was like, this is really the stupidest thing in the world that we should be opposed to each other. What are we even opposed about? Like, what is there? It's just that they watch this show that says that everyone on the left, or where I live, is crazy and really has really terrible motives. And people here watch these shows and talk to their friends who believe the same thing. So it's like my rebellion against what I consider to be this manipulated lunacy. And so what started it for me was really that experience of not viewing them the way I'm supposed to. And then also, you know, I have kids like you do. None of us want our kids to inherit this world where everyone's fighting with each other. People on the right, people on the left, you know, even people on the right and left who hate each other, they don't want their kids to inherit a world where people are hating each other. They want the other side to capitulate. They don't know how to get the other side to capitulate, but they don't want the hatred.
Yeah.
And so I kind of see a way that we don't have to live in that world.
I love that, man. It's so hard to giving people, and my hope that is that people see things like this, see things like the Enemies Project, and think, you know, this isn't a conversation that exists in a vacuum. This is something that I could do. This is something that I could help, you know, so-and-so and my other friend do, because they're constantly fighting, but we're all at the same parties together. You know, like, I have people, I think of my mom and my dad. My mom and dad are divorced, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this. My mom and dad in the same room together, it's only a matter of time before one of them says something to the other, and it's like dropping a grenade and leaving. And I constantly have this thought, like, oh man, okay, my dad's going to be here. He's coming up from Florida, which he constantly says he loves because he's a Trump guy, and he's like, I love Florida. I can wear my Trump hat everywhere, and nobody says anything mean to me. My mom is kind of like apathetic politically. I think, you know, she's liberal, but when they get together, it's like, oh man, how long until this turns into a therapy session about what happened 14 years ago, 15 years ago. And I end up being in the middle saying, okay, you've got a good point. You've got a good point. And I feel like a lot of people do that either in friend groups or with their family without thinking, hey, this is something that that could benefit them into maybe eventually finding some kind of long-term peace or long-term understanding of each other's positions. Mm. But yet when people see what you do with, you know, high production value in a room, very organized, they think, I could never do this. And
which side? They can never be the person in the middle, or they can never be the person the people who brought together?
Maybe both. But I was talking maybe the person in the middle. You know, I could never be the person to facilitate this, but I think we all have the power to do that, even regardless of our biases, regardless of what we believe. You know, I do this whenever my parents, often when my parents are in the same room, and I don't have any professional experience as a mediator. I just have the experience of a kid who wants his parents to get along, or at least not fight, you know, and that's what I think you're doing. And I want people to see what you do and see the ultimate, the resolutions that these people find and think, I could do this. Mm. This guy is doing it. Sure, he's a professional, but I know people who disagree, and we share space, and it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for me to keep them from arguing when we talk about
things. So first, let's talk for a moment about what they would need to do, and then also why people don't do it. You know, what the cost is to them. Yes, there's a cost to being the person in the middle or the person who might be seen as disloyal in some way. So I'd say that the key thing to do, I mean, people don't have, I spend 5 hours with people and then we, you know, edit it down to 1 hour. But the key thing is what you were talking about, which is finding why they're interested in this. You know, you were talking about, well, they're trying to protect their kids. That's the why. They're both trying to protect your kids. Let's just talk about that for a second. What is the why of not what you're interested in? Let's not talk about the what. And let's not talk about what if you believe the other person is truly interested in that or whether they're a hypocrite. Just let's find out the why. And when they see each other's whys, when they really understand that, it's kind of like the whole thing ratchets down, particularly if you can get them to like just not only see the other person's why, but say it out loud. Like, tell me why you think they're interested in it. And if they get it wrong, they're probably going to say, I think you're interested in it because all the people on your side have told you this stupid thing that you believe. That's not the why. The why is that I love kids. The why is that I want to spend time with my friends in the outdoors or whatever it is that, you know, that's driving their interest in guns, let's say. The why is that I am afraid of a dictatorship in our country and in the world. And I've seen what dictatorships do and they destroy people. And so I want to be prepared for that, to care for people. That's the why. Whatever it is that their deep reason is, if you can get them, if you can articulate, help them articulate it and get the other side to basically say it, the conflict, just the air is sucked out of it. And they don't, you don't need to find solutions at that point. You know, like, it's like, yeah, we actually are really interested in the same things. Isn't that interesting? Like, why? And then they start talking about, like, isn't that interesting? It's very basic. Like, you know, when I take them much deeper into their history of why they're interested in it and much deeper into their, the emotion of it, but it's a very simple thing to do as the person in the middle. If you can find that why in both of them and not have the other person challenge it. So, but then there's like, why won't people like do this in conversations? Well, it's risky, right? Like, who's going to show up at a party and mediate between two friends? It's risky because the person in the middle, there are many levels of risk, but let's say you're truly in the middle. Okay. Well, people come after the person in the middle because they think that, like, people come after me a lot on this show. Like, if you look at the comments, not like 80% are unbelievably supportive. Like, this is the most beautiful thing. This is what our society needs. But 20% of them are like, no, Larry's doing something really terrible. Terrible. Because he's legitimating the other side. Like, you are, you know, a tool of the Nazis.
By platforming
you're,
them.
You're a tool of the Nazis, basically. Whatever, you know, the other side is always the Nazis.
Yeah.
And so there's that risk. But also, if, like, you're on one side, you know, politically, I think. Maybe not far, but maybe on one side. There's also not just the, you're legitimating the other side as being in the middle, but if you're among your friends, and you like sympathize to any extent or explain the reasons of the other side to any extent, I think we've probably all experienced that people will go after you, particularly public, like if you're in a public forum where you express some level of interest in the other side, they will challenge your loyalty in a big way. And that's really frightening to people. I had an experience like that I'm going to do a show on recently, where I'm part of this, I'm Jewish. I'm part of this Jewish group. And there was this one guy who had a terrible experience, who was sitting in the car with his son, and some other guy walked by and said, Heil Hitler. And the guy who walked by was African-American. The guy in the car was Jewish, but how did the guy walking by know the guy in the car was Jewish with his son? He had no way of knowing it. So there's, in my community, where I live, there's this group of Jewish people who have this, where they talk about like Zionism. And I'm not like a strong Zionist or anti-Zionist, but I've been put on this thing and people were talking about, you know, this is a hate crime. The guy got out of his car and confronted the other person and said, what are you talking about? And the African-American guy showed him a knife. It's like, oh, okay. Oof. So people were like, this is a hate crime, which involved the FBI, you know, and there was a lot of sympathy toward this guy. But then they were talking about, you know, we should involve the FBI, the police, the state. And, you know, there was a lot of like, this is a terrible thing. And I just got on and said, it's probably a lunatic. You know, like it's probably a guy who's meant, he didn't know you were Jewish. Like, who knows what,
who knows what he meant.
And it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible what he did. And he's probably really dangerous. But let's not, maybe, is it worthwhile to blow it up? Is it worthwhile? I just question that. Like from your own personal psychology, what you're doing with yourself out of concern for you, like, is it worth putting so much energy into this one person? And I just offered that question. I said, I'm really coming out of a concern for like this community. Like, is it good for the community to make a bigger deal out of this? And for you personally, and I think that what happened to you and your son is terrible. Well, what came back to me was immediately, you are a traitor to Jews.
Wow.
And from this guy, like, you know, I didn't want to talk about politics, but from one of our own people, here we are. You're a terrible person. And you're a troll. I ultimately, you know, said, look, this is the reason I expressed it. I really hear you. And maybe it was a wrong time for me to say all that because you're really suffering right now. And the energy should all be on your suffering about what you went through with your kid. And so it was a wrong time for me to express it, but I just saw it being escalated. And I was really, yeah. It was a concern that I was expressing for our community, like not wanting to bring more attention to give voice to this person and not wanting you to invest so deeply in the response. Just think it was a concern for you. And people then, and I expressed it in such a way that people came back and said, that was beautiful. You know, that was, I now understand. I stayed with the conversation and the response was overwhelming that they understood where I was coming from as opposed to being a traitor. But the first response was immediate and strong. And from people who, they don't maybe know me personally, but I have like people know me in the community and respect me, you know, and just been part of the community for a long time. And so here I was considered a traitor for any expression of what they considered to be understanding for the other side or something like that. That's the cost. And particularly in a public forum when it's not one-on-one. Now the guy who went through this experience, he and I then had an exchange that was really nice and we came to an understanding. But still the people in the community who expressed those things, I don't know them personally. We haven't reconciled. And I want to get them on my show, actually, so I can talk to them personally. You know, I really want to be a model for that because I don't see them as evil. They might see me that way, and maybe they don't anymore. But that's why people don't turn from their community. And it's so frightening. And you can see in the trans episode that I did, you know, Eve, who is this woman who is trans, expresses deep understanding for people in MAGA. Who have concerns about trans people, that her expression of understanding for people in MAGA and their concern, whether correct or not, is that they're concerned about their kids. I'm not talking about the enemy makers who want to drive us apart, but there are people who are deeply concerned about their kids. So Eve really gets it when she hears some stories and she expresses understanding. Her response dials their hatred from a 10 to a 5. She did more for the trans community from my perspective than almost anyone I've ever seen. But there are quite a number of comments from trans people and from people who support trans people who say, Eve's kind of a traitor. Wow.
Wow.
You know, and there are also comments of support for her, deep comments of support. But there are a lot of comments which say, wow, I can't believe Eve is such a traitor. And I've heard from a friend who is deeply connected to the trans community where there's kind of a debate in the trans community about whether people should even watch this. Because why should she be giving any understanding to those freaking Nazis? Is that our job to understand Nazis? It's their job to stop being Nazis. So they're coming at it from a moral perspective. And what they're not understanding is she did more than almost anybody to dial down the hatred against trans people. Because she expressed understanding about what other people are concerned about, and that understanding strikes them as love.
Yeah, and or at least empathy.
I call it love, but it comes across if someone understands you. Understanding is the deepest form of like personal satisfaction when someone really deeply understands you. And Nancy, the MAGA person, totally shifted at that moment when Eve understood her. You could see the like, oh my God. But yeah, you could see the shift in their relationship. But the risk to Eve is evident. And that's true of any of these. Like I did an episode, which will come out soon, on with a Palestinian and a Zionist Jew. Both of them, you know, it was so hard to find people in those communities who would speak with each other, in part because they're so concerned about the kickback from their own community, being seen as disloyal. They're on this show to serve their community so that people don't hate but they're called disloyal. It's the most self-sacrificial thing to reach out to the other side. But the risk is that you pay a price, and a big price. And so I think of these people, you know, people like you who do it, as a hero. I don't consider myself that, because that's my profession, right? And I'm doing it kind of that's my whole purpose in life, you know? So I'm not getting all the negative feedback typically that I did, like in that Jewish conversation. People are supportive of what I do, but the people who do it casually, who it's not their profession, it's not their thing, there's a huge amount of risk. And it, for me, they are absolute heroes, because they shift people deeply, and they do it at risk to themselves. Like, what other definition of hero is there?
No, I certainly don't consider myself one, but I know I understand.
Nobody calls themselves that, but I call it that.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, how crazy is it that something as mutually beneficial as understanding one another's perspectives and faults and beliefs, facilitating that or taking the time to understand people who disagree with you could be considered heroic? Because if you think about it, it's so mutually, it's like planting a garden for the community to eat from. It's so mutually beneficial. It's a little bit of work. Nobody would consider somebody who plants a community garden a hero, unless perhaps, you know, the community was starving. But, and you know, you could argue that our community is starving right now for understanding. But yeah, it is tough sometimes. But I think so much of this is thanks to a large network of supporters and people who support our overall message of what we're trying to do. You know, this is like from day one, I've said that this is a community-based thing. It's not just me.
Yeah.
It's not just us on a podcast. It's a community-based thing. It doesn't work unless we all work together. And it sounds corny, and you know, when I say it out loud, but I went to a shooting competition, I think I was telling you about, when we spoke earlier last weekend. And it's not what most people think of when they think of a shooting competition. It was a very warm atmosphere. Everybody got along. It was a very diverse atmosphere of people, of beliefs, backgrounds. You know, that's the community that makes all of this possible. And I think that there is a community of people out there also who want to step up and facilitate what you're trying to do also. And I think getting your message out there, getting your show out there and showing people like, hey, this is happening. People are having these conversations. What am I doing to be a part of that? Or, you know, what am I doing to help fix this broken system that we have right now is really going to get people to, you know, heed that call. If that's a thing.
So, you know, I you're going back to the kind of a message of hope and positivity, where I was saying it's really risky. And I do want to, share that. And I really do share that hope and positivity. Obviously I wouldn't be doing this otherwise. And the feedback has been tremendously positive, because people are just craving it. They're tired. Most of us are just tired of the level of animus.
Yeah. But I guess what I was saying was that, I was saying that essentially the people who, there's risk involved, and the risk is involved when your community is not supportive of the thing that you do. And my community has become people who are supportive of what we're trying to do.
Because your community is a bridging community, I think. You know, like your community is almost naturally, I mean, if it's left-leaning people, which it might be, I don't know, but if it is, or center people,
mostly,
you know, who they're already the, and they're gun owners, they're already black sheep, right? And I think you described it as that on your webpage. But to some extent, they're used to this. And so they are the middle people already. You know, it's not like, and they're probably having to explain often, you know, and they've all figured out how to do it.
Yeah.
They've all figured out how to do it. You know, if you love guns, you know, it's not just like you're it's not just like it's something you do in the corner of your house. Like it's something you go out and do. People know, your friends know that you're out shooting. Like it's a recreation of yours. It takes your time. And so people have had to, in your community, figure out how to explain it to their own community, most likely, you know? And
yeah, absolutely.
And so they're really skilled at it. You know, it's they're not the quiet middle person.
It is a spectrum though. You know, there's, and I'm sure you have the same thing like you expressed, you know, you've got a ton of pushback from trying to reason with people and showing that you understand the opposite side. There's people who come to us all the time who say, listen, I'm so glad I found your page. I can't tell anyone I'm friends with that I want to own a gun because they're going to think that I'm X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And that is very common, you know, and I think sometimes I'm guilty of having a more narrow, my sample size of the community is sometimes smaller because of the people that I interact with on a larger basis versus the people who occasionally drop into our messages or an email saying, I'm having a hard time reaching
because
my family
your community
or my friends
is
about
these
this.
People. And, yeah. Whereas as someone who's new, their community isn't, they, you know, they're really interested in guns. The thing that I would say, you know, you said, you know, normal people, why can't they should be able to have this conversation. And the one thing that I would say is really important in having the conversation, let's say you're a gun owner and you're part of a liberal community and people just don't get that. You're like, you're contributing to kids being killed. Like that is awful. What is wrong with you? Don't you know that if it weren't for guns, kids wouldn't be killed and thousands of them? Like that's so selfish. That might be the response.
Yeah.
And so what I would say is that it's really, you know, when you have that conversation, it's really up to you to understand where the person's coming from, to not, they might, you, it's natural for you to view that as an attack and to see that you're not being understood. And for you to be like, no, what you don't understand is the reason I'm doing this, the place I would go immediately is, that's interesting. Tell me more about what your concern is. Just go there and hear that they're going to be concerned about kids and just let that sink in, like get that, really get it for a moment. And then you express why you're doing it and they're still not going to understand. And they're going to go back to their original point. Like, no, you're doing that. You don't understand. You're hurting kids. It's hypocritical. It's hypocritical. And you go back to understanding them one more time. That's if they're repeating themselves, they're calling you a hypocrite, it's because they are passionate about their love for kids. And go into it deeply one more time. And when you hear them the second time or the third time, then they're going to be willing to hear you. And just express it like, I'm doing it because of this.
Yeah.
And you don't need to get them to agree. That's just why I'm doing it. But their dislike of your position, once you understand them, again, is going to dial down from a 9 to a 6 or a 5 or a 4. And the more times you hear them without a but, just really hear them, it's going to just come down so that they're going to see you somewhat differently. But you have to do it multiple times. Don't think it's going to work in the first iteration of the conversation. And I'm sure you've gotten good at this. But for the people who can't say it to their friends and family, that's what I would recommend, that you just know in advance that you're not going to be accepted in this right away, but you can be. It really depends on how you have a conversation.
Yeah, no, I think that's there's probably some famous quote about nothing built well ever came from, never came easy.
It's a famous quote now. Let me just say it again.
There you go. Nothing built well ever was easy to build or something like that. Jordan, there is, you know, it's one of those things that, and I think it's up to everybody to do what they can, when they can, how they can, because not everybody has the social equity or the privilege like of being a, you know, I fully recognize that there are, and this wasn't always the case. This was because I listened to people and I heard them. I fully recognize that there is a privilege that comes with being a straight white man in today's society that certain marginalized groups do not have. They don't have the equity to be able to say, okay, I'm going to go out on a limb and risk this relationship or risk this, you know, the whatever. So me being able to do this, and I have this conversation often with my wife, who sometimes shares concern that she thinks that I'm getting too deep into certain areas that don't necessarily represent me as a person. And what I just say is, listen, like, there is the reason I do it is because I can, and I wouldn't do it if people stopped attacking those people. Like, I came into this trying to say gun rights are for everyone, and I wasn't going to be political. I wasn't going to spend more time talking about one group over another. But every time I said gun rights are for everyone, it was only a matter of time before somebody was in the comments saying, oh, even those pedophile, trans, mentally ill, you know, people who want to indoctrinate our kids. Like, it was, that's obviously, yeah, you know, an exaggeration, but it was only a matter of time. And then my immediate response is, yeah, even you're wrong, but yeah, even everyone, even people we disagree with. The thing that we get all the time is, I'm sorry, but I don't support arming my enemies. And it's such a loaded statement because, like you said, you've got these people out there who are enemy makers, who have convinced these people that they actually have enemies, first of all, that they have people who, because when I perceive an enemy, I think that's somebody who wants me to die. That's somebody who's on the opposite side and wants to be at war against me. And these people are convinced that there are those people out there. Or another thing is, yeah, I don't support temporary gun owners, the ones who only want a gun until they have power, and then they're going to take everybody else's guns. Like, there's a lot to unpack there. And I think we do a pretty good job of determining who is arguing in good faith and who wants to have a conversation and who just wants to sling, you know, slurs. And there's a lot of creative ways that people can get around the censorship on Instagram in order to call somebody a name with spelling and punctuation, I found. But
Instagram is unbelievable in the vitriol that it's
so toxic. You know, we
just released a few episodes. You know, our show is new to being released, and in the first week, you know, we released two episodes, and we've gotten, I don't know, millions of views on Instagram. On YouTube, where the full episodes are, it's good. Fewer. You know, it's 20,000 views or something like that. But on Instagram, the reason we've gotten so many views is because people see the people saying that hard things about each other, and they don't really go deeper into that. Oh, but there's reconciliation in this. And then they express that they're on one side or the other. And the level of vitriol in the comments is beyond my ability to deal with. Like on YouTube, yeah, you know, like, you know, maybe there's many hundreds of comments and you can look at them and they're mostly positive and supportive. On Instagram, thousands of comments, it's just overwhelming. And they're all like, they don't even make sense, a lot of them. Like, I don't even understand. Maybe they're bots, I don't know. But
some are, but
there's so much anger. It's like, it must just be part of the medium that it's acceptable. Like, what's your view on that?
Yeah, there's a very detached subset of internet culture, you know, I can speak for gun culture specifically, but where it's almost, and I don't mean to use like an ageist term or anything, but it's almost this boomer mentality. And I think everybody thinks of their parents when,
look at me. All right.
Yeah, but that clearly it's not everybody.
There's a little color of my hair.
I also wouldn't have thought that you were, I wouldn't have thought you were a boomer, but that's,
I don't know the technical right. definition, the but I probably, yeah.
Bay Area air or something. but like, I look at my dad's Facebook feed and it's just screaming into the void. Him saying things. Mm. And I feel like a lot of it comes from the feeling that these people have that they're not being heard. Mm-hmm. So that their concerns are not being addressed. So they use Instagram, Facebook as almost as like as a alternative to therapy. Because I'm a huge proponent of getting therapy. Whether you think you need it or not, you probably need it. And especially my parents' generation, who were taught to suppress your emotions, who were taught that, you know, there's not, nothing good comes from talking about your feelings. And, you know, there's still things that I'm working through with my dad now. We joke about all the time. My wife and I was probably in my early 20s before he started saying, I love you regularly. I knew he did. His dad never said it to him. And that creates a whole, you know, litany of issues that I'm sure a lot of this stuff stems from. He was a bit of a womanizer growing up, and you know, he always taught me to treat women with respect, but the way he spoke about women said otherwise. Mm-hmm. And you know, things like this really shape like who he is now. And I think a lot of it came from the fact that he never felt valued. And I think a lot of these people who go on Instagram and say these horrific things do so from a deep-seated insecurity that they are not feeling valued and that their opinions and beliefs do not matter. Mm-hmm. So that's their way of, that's their way of feeling powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really the only excuse that I have.
Yeah.
And when you look at it like that, it's much easier to feel sorry for people, and not in a pity way, but in like, you know, I wish, or maybe in a pity way, depending on how bad they are, but in a way that, you know, I don't take a lot of the stuff that people say personally, because I feel like it's just a symptom of a larger issue that they are not currently dealing with.
Yeah. So Instagram is clips, and your obviously your podcast is long form. And what I've found in my short time is that long form invites much more sincere exchange. Like people who've watched our you know, entire episodes, which are an hour, they're 80% deeply sincere on one side or the other, but with respect. Do you find the same thing? Like when the comments to your podcast itself are very different?
Yeah, there's, you know, like I was telling you earlier, the people who can comment on our posts are only people who follow the page, so that really does cut down on a lot of the like the mindless vitriol. Yeah. And I did that purely because I wanted to prevent people who actually follow the page and are invested in it to be, I wanted to prevent them from being harassed. That was really it, because I had people calling slurs and all kinds of stuff. You know, I want conversation, and we still get a lot of very good conversation in our comments. But yeah,
that you can, limiting responses to people who only follow the page, that's on Instagram, or is that where is that? That's on Instagram.
Yes, that's on Instagram.
I don't know if you do that on YouTube. I need to find out. You mentioned that to me before.
I don't think so. Uh-huh.
That's a really good filter. I mean, that's just a great filter in terms of your seriousness.
It is. That's really it. And you know, it's something I wish we didn't have to do. And I spent a long time struggling with it, because out of principle, I want open discourse, but mm-hmm. I also don't want a toxic environment where people are just filtering through shit to get to substance. And
yeah, they're not there for an exchange. They're there to make a point and run.
No.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's like the guy who said Heil Hitler to the Jewish guy and his son. Is that the comment that I want people to be spending time engaging with?
Right.
When is that good for them to do that? Is that good for the greater goal? I don't think so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I understand that point. Thanks for the education on this stuff. It's new to me, and it's really a new world. It's a new world for me, because the world that I deal with is personal exchange. You know, obviously the only social media that I've ever dealt with, really been on, is Reddit, because then I just see what I want to see. So it's really new to me. And it's
well, listen, I help my mom and dad with technology questions all the time. So if you ever have any questions, feel free to reach out.
I'm not that old, but I know
you're not that old either. But Larry, yeah. So it's been about an hour, and I know you said you wanted to keep it to that. So what we usually do when we end these episodes is I'll ask you if you had a piece of advice for people. It could be related to what we talked about. It could be unrelated. We our first piece of advice that we had was make sure you wash your dishwasher out with citrate or something like that. It was a long time ago, but if you had a piece of advice for anybody, either related to or not related to what we talked about, what do you think that piece of advice would be?
You know, the thing that occurred to me was, two things occurred to me. First, I didn't say that I went gut shooting last year with a friend in Nashville, first time, and I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. So I want to put that out there.
Cool.
But in terms of the advice, the thing that came to me, and it's not like it just popped into my mind, would be to like unbridled love for your kids. Just like not tied to any achievement, you know, tied to like being a good person, tied to trying hard, irrespective of the risks, not tied to any success. Just, and you know, like that I love what you're doing in the world, and encouragement, you know, that I agree with you that a lot of the challenges in our lives are because of, you know, as we grew up, what we received. And so I didn't receive the best when I was growing up. And I think that spins off into all the things that I do in my life that, you know, I try to correct for. And I've tried to be like the best parent I could so my kids don't go through it. And anyway, that's the thing that popped into my mind. Just love the heck out of them. And not just for them, like it's just the best thing in the world to love another person.
It really is, man. I get emotional. I'm trying not to. I try not to because it's, you know, we've talked about our kids a lot on this podcast. And one thing that my wife and I talk about all the time is we both had very different childhoods. We both had a very different set of problems. We each had an individual parent who was an alcoholic, so that we share.
Me too.
But
hey, I'm with you.
Yeah, hey. But that was one thing that we said, you know, when we decided to have a kid was I caught myself the other day. I found myself saying I'm proud of you a lot to her. And I thought, oh man, I should probably tone that back because I don't want her to get used to me saying I'm proud of her, because then it's not going to have its meaning that it normally does, that it did for me growing up. And I snapped myself out of that because I was like, fuck that. No, it shouldn't be special. Like, if I'm proud of her, I should tell her I'm proud of her. And I want that to be a normal thing so that when she hears it, she's like, oh yeah, obviously you're proud of me. Like, I'm a great kid. I don't want her to think like I did something special and now he's finally proud of me. I'm proud. Like, I want her to know that I'm proud of her for putting her things away when I didn't ask her to. I want her to know that I'm proud of her for saying thank you or for remembering. She corrects me sometimes. It's hilarious. She says, I'll ask her for something. She'll say, you didn't say please. Like, she's three. And I'm like, you're absolutely right, honey. I did not say please. Can I please have that? Thank you so much for reminding me. And it's so funny because I'm like, my wife and I will tell each other sometimes that, like, we'll just look at her and we'll be like, how did we raise such a perfect kid? And I know she's not perfect. Like, nobody's perfect. But in our eyes, she is. And in our eyes, in her brain, in her mind, she's going to know that we think she is. And that was one of those things that, like, I love that piece of advice that you gave. Like, it is, love should come without restrictions.
Yeah, and I want to share a brief story of my friend Ofer.
Please do.
When his mom, like, he's from Israel, and his mom is like this little Jewish lady who, like, thinks he is everything in the world. Like, oh my goodness, he is unbelievable, Ofer, you're so... So when his son, you know, was born and had bris, which is where they snip the penis. His mom was standing next to me and she said, look at Avi. That's Ofer's son. Look at Avi. He is a genius. I'm not joking. Look at his eyes. He's looking directly at me. He's a genius. The kid's eight days old. He is a genius. Unbelievable. And so this is what my friend Ofer grew up with. Right, this woman, like when he went traveling when he was in his 20s, he came back with like all these tapes, you know, hours and hours and hours of all of these things that he videotaped all over the world. It was so boring. It was like, and his mom watched it all and she told me, did you see it? Did you see what Ofer did? He is a genius. It is unbelievable. The whole world should see what he did. You know, she watched like tens of hours of this crap. And so this is what the guy grew up with. And you might say, well, you know, that's unhealthy. No, he and I worked in the same environment for this guy in Japan as attorneys. I didn't get along with the guy at all. Ofer got along with the guy. Because for me, everything the guy said when he said I was stupid, which he said all the time, I took it to heart. Ofer didn't.
Yeah.
It didn't land for him. There was no place for it to attach to. And he has had in remarkable success in really competitive environments because people have come to really admire and love him. Not because he's brilliant, but because there's no place for the critique to land.
Wow.
You know, that for me is a story of stupid love that really works.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love that. That is like nothing speaks to me more than hearing things like that, because it's so validating that. Because I think every parent thinks, you know, I don't want my kid to be soft.
Right.
I don't want my kid to grow up like the world's hard and she's going to not be ready for it if we raise her too soft. That's not your job as a parent to harden your kids. Your job is to support them and to show them that they have a place to land,
I agree with that.
Emotionally and physically. all the time.
I agree with that. I agree with that completely. The one piece I would be cautious about is about resilience. I do think resilience is important. And yes. So that's the flip side is that, you know, if your kids always think that their success is they're successful, then they might not be resilient. And so the one piece of advice that I heard when I first became a parent, which I stuck to, is if you're going to compliment your child, don't compliment them on the results. Compliment them on their effort.
Compliment them on their efforts.
And that really is, I think, changes the game for them. Because then they don't have to be successful.
100% agree. Yeah. Because then you're like I said, then I'm proud of you for trying hard, not for doing well.
Yeah, exactly. And then they don't have to protect that identity and fight for it and fight other people, which is never really a successful strategy.
Man, I love when these delve into dad podcasts, like dad episodes.
Being a dad is the best. And
sometimes they come up.
Your kid's age is the best. Like I remember when my kids were 2 and 4, my two girls were 2 and 4, and I'd walk down the street and other dads would look at me like, all right, man. Yeah. Like they knew that like you are going through the best experience of your fucking life. You're in it right now, you know, and you are in it right now. Like the whole world loves you. Right. Like not, usually, you know, the world's pretty nice. You walk down the street, people say hello to you. At least that's my experience. But when my kids were young, it's like women would look at you and be like, you're a good man. You know, just because you have a little kid.
Dude,
just because you have a little
so
kid.
Wild.
And men are like, you're in the time of your life. It's just like the whole, there's love coming at you from every direction.
It is such a good feeling. Like, you know, as a guy, I constantly walk through life where I'm like, just don't creep out women, man. Like, just don't say the thing that you feel like you should say because they're not going to take it the way that you mean
it. You look beautiful
today. Like,
don't
creep
say
people
that.
Out. No, don't say any of that. Don't just shut the fuck up. Do your shopping and go home. Like when I walk around with her, like if I put her on my shoulders or like if I'm just holding her hand, just catching smiles from people, especially women who just see it.
Yeah.
It's just such a wholesome feeling. Yeah. Like it's, you know, I don't do it for that. Obviously I do it for my daughter, but it's such a nice, it's nice to be perceived as not a threat for once.
Oh, yeah.
It's,
yeah.
for, you know, even more so like, okay, maybe this guy's not a piece of shit either. Maybe he's a good dad.
Yeah. It is nice. It is like, and it's the time in your life, I think. Maybe when you're older also, you're perceived as less of a threat, you know, when you become like 80, 90, if you make it that age. But I think this is the time of your life where everybody's going to like just shine on you and just totally take it in.
I never thought I'd love being a dad, but you know, here I am. I was a very hesitant. It took me a couple months to really like get into it. Mm-hmm. It just didn't click for me like right away. I didn't have this beaming love that everyone says you're going to have. So it was like 2 solid months of me asking myself, what the fuck's wrong with me? Mm-hmm. Why don't I feel this way? And me just being in my head. And then one day it clicked. I actually got really drunk and got Chinese food. And my fortune cookie said, your best friend was once a total stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And cool. I've never felt a connection to a child for a fortune cookie before, but I saved it.
Wise.
I broke down. Like I bawled my eyes out in front of my wife, hugging her. And like, it was just the piece of perspective that I needed to flip the light switch that like, this person who I'm struggling to feel emotions for right now, she's going to be my best friend.
And that's a great lesson for early dads, you know, because a lot of people experience that you don't feel the connection that maybe the woman does immediately and that it'll come like the first, when they start looking into your eyes and they start recognizing you, you know, you've never felt anything like that before. And the connection is so incredibly deep. Yeah.
So if you're a new dad listening to this right now and you're feeling that way, don't worry. It's coming.
It's coming.
And it's coming faster than you could be prepared for. Well, awesome, man. I really appreciate it. I didn't expect us to go into this, but I appreciate it. And I think your piece of advice was awesome. You know, there's so much out there that we deal with every day as adults that, you know, I just think one of the easiest things you can do is love your kid. It might not always be easy. You know, sometimes we love them, but we don't like them. And, you know, thankfully she's not at the age where that's a thing, but I know when she gets older.
Oh, I got a 17-year-old. Yeah. So
you're in it. You're in the trenches.
Yeah, and she, you know, she's embarrassed by me. And he said that I am the single most embarrassing dad in the high school. I'm like, how could, What did I do? Like, people don't even know what
that's an achievement.
Yeah. What does that even mean? Like, I don't, like, I'm just respectful to her friend, but from her perspective, you know? And so, it's
what did you talk to them? Because you say anything?
I ask them about their
that's
lives.
Hilarious. Yeah. That's so funny.
But they'll go through the, you know, they'll come back. That's what I hear.
Yeah.
So I've really enjoyed optimistic. Jordan. I've enjoyed
yeah,
hearing
same.
Your perspective on things as well.
Likewise. I think what you're doing is going to do great things, man. And I'm excited. So, to
So can I say one last thing? I forgot. I usually forget.
Yeah. That. Plug yourself.
I need participants. Okay. So if people are still listening at this moment, I should have said it early in your podcast. The life
people are
the
life.
I'm sorry. Of course they are.
of course.
The lifeblood of my project, which is The Enemies Project, and it's on YouTube, and the episodes are off the charts beautiful. You will see. But I need participants, and it's hard to find participants, at least at this stage for me. That's always the hard work. And I'm looking for, we did a guns episode. I would do another one, particularly between two people who are of the same family, where one person is really into guns and the other person believes it's offensive.
Ooh.
So I'd love to do that, but also we'd do another guns episode. I'm looking for, where's my list that we want to do right now? Racial justice, DEI, so both sides of that. Immigration, looking for both sides of that. And we have some people who want to be on that program, but we're looking for others. Climate, and with climate, really, for all of these issues, like immigration, it's someone who's deeply affected by it personally. It's not just like I'm offended because of, you know, I'm afraid of the distant or effects of the loss of due process. It's more like I know people who are subject to this, and it's really frightening for me.
Yeah.
Climate as well. Who are experiencing the effects of climate change or really concerned about their kids or believe that climate change is baloney. And traditional families, particularly conservatives, who really believe that the traditional family is very helpful to kids' well-being, as opposed to feminist-led or gay parent-led households, because I do have people on the left for that. So I need participants. And if you watch and believe in the project, please help me find participants. There are forms on the page. That's how you, and you know, it's amazing. People have offered to donate money, to volunteer. Just in the first 2 weeks, it's the response has been tremendous. But where I need help is participants.
I need people.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my plug.
You heard him, everybody. Find people. If you're not that person, find somebody that you know and have them reach out on the website. Awesome.
Thanks, Jordan.
Well, and check out our Patreon if you like the episode. That's it. I always forget to plug that too. But Larry, thank you so much for coming on, man. This was a great time.
Yeah. Okay. Take care, Jordan.
All right. We'll be in touch. Take care.